When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is Checo Might Have Been Wrong, But He's First. That from Eric Gados on Twitter. The runner-up was Nicholas, who suggested, who can crash the slowest? And also Ian Lapworth chipped in with Perez wins, provide opportunity for rare Christian Horner interview. And I have to include this one because Chris insisted. Aaron came in with, when it singer rains, it's Singapore's. I'm your host, Richard Reddy. Welcome to the Singapore Grand Prix race review. I think that race was a slow burner. I enjoyed my afternoon watching television today. It was a race with some intrigue, some tactical will they, won't they. And in an era where we're used to seeing the fast guys just fly towards the front to be able to breeze by because we've got all the easy overtaking that we wanted, it was nice to see a race where Max Verstappen had to work for every single place. Just like the olden days. That said, I'm not going to overly defend the Singapore Grand Prix, but I did enjoy the race today. What we saw today was an error generator of a Grand Prix and a track. And even the best on the grid were tested and made mistakes. You'd be hard pushed to find a driver that wasn't on the limit today. And I think that's kind of neat. So coming up today, we'll ask, was this the best ever Singapore Grand Prix? That bar being as low or high as you would wish to rate it. Does this race prove once and for all that Matt is wrong and Perez is better than Albon? And we'll ask whose hair was best cut out for the post-race humidity, and are the stewards taking the test after seeing the answers? And we'll also ask, did Albon just have the worst crash since Taki Inui? But first, I'll remind you that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed. With the kind permission of our better halves, we aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined in the shed by Matt Two Rumpets. Hey, Matt.
Hey, today I learned that Sergio Perez has no idea whatsoever what 10 car lengths look like.
We're also joined by Chris Stevens. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Spanners. I'm very self-conscious about the fact that I'm not wearing my Missed Apex t-shirt tonight.
How dare you? Why aren't you in uniform?
Because I forgot about it.
Does it not fit anymore, Chris? Do I need to send you
a new one?
Well,
there's that as well, but you can only see this much the on the live stream, so it doesn't matter.
It's a very forgiving camera angle. We're also joined by Kyle Powers. Hey, Kyle.
Looks a bit damp outside. Can we delay the start of the show for an hour?
We can't delay the show because we have to ask a very, very important question, which is, Chris, was this the best ever Singapore Grand Prix? I'm going to say yes, because the only other Singapore Grand Prix that I can think of that comes to light is the 2017 one, where, as we know, Verstappen wiped out ruthlessly both
Ferrari cars, and I don't need to debate that because that is a statement of fact.
Yes, exactly. No debate about that whatsoever.
That's what the Ferrari account said at the time, by the way.
I mean, I think it had a lot of peaks and troughs. I think we sort of got to about lap 12 and they called it out. And I thought, oh God, we're only on lap 12. This is going to take forever. And then I blinked and suddenly they were like, we've been going for an hour and 40 minutes. There's only a few left of the race. And so I think it was right up there. But I do think there were probably some better races. I always think 2012. I can't really remember much about 2012? What happened in the 2012 Singapore Grand Prix. But every race in 2012 was amazing. So it must have been right up there.
Kyle, I mean, I have such low expectations of this race in general. So, you know, a kind of a drying track, it did make it better. That was the least bad Singapore Grand Prix I can remember when it comes to just, you know, lap after lap. I felt like watching on the onboards, I got a real sense of kind of peril and cars chasing and opportunities to overtake.
Yes, it was certainly tense. It was very dramatic, even if there wasn't a litany of overtakes. But I kind of agree. We've kind of set the bar pretty low for excitement if, like, you know, contextualizes in loads of overtakes. We kind of set the bar pretty low in Singapore for that. But I thought it was a very sort of a tense race, and I really, really enjoyed it. What would have made it much, much better is if we had an additional transition point from full wets to the inters, then from the inters to the dry, which we never actually got treated to, which was a shame.
I thought the lead battle was stunning. Really, really enjoyed that. It sort of persisted throughout the race, and the gaps sort of grew and shrunk a little bit, but the best 10 minutes of that race was just after they'd gone to slicks and Leclerc was chasing down Sergio Perez, and that for me was kind of peak F1.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we kind of almost got stymied a little bit again, and this seems to happen every time by this safety car. It was just as the transition points was sort of happening, and we could have seen the people. I think as you mentioned in group chat earlier, it's a bit like the F2 race where the people would have had some heat into their slicks versus the people who come out and went one lap longer. So that would have been really interesting to see how that played out, but unfortunately, we were denied.
Matt.
Yeah, well, I was just going to go with, aside from the entertaining crashes and exploding Alpines, the race was quite frankly dull until the pit stops started. So I tend to agree with Kyle. It's a shame we didn't have conditions that necessitated a second round of pit stops in this race.
Are we so spoiled that we are not satisfied with a dramatic conclusion and lots of events throughout the race? I think if you look at the top four, even the top five, so Perez, Leclerc, Sainz, Hamilton behind, and then Norris, like a further step behind. I guess they were static throughout all of that first period. But what are we not? Do we not appreciate the tactics enough, Matt, to go, well, what will Hamilton do here? Where's Leclerc's opportunity? Why did Perez suddenly go ahead? And then we had like 85 cars go out.
Well, I think what became very obvious after the second virtual safety car is that everyone was, and they even played the team radio. Everyone was simply playing a game of make these enters last as long as possible. Yeah. So at least for me, at that point, I knew that there was going to be no overtaking. Everyone was just simply going to try and hold on to the tires, and only mistakes would shake up the order.
What we needed was someone to do something different that would have shaken up the order. So had someone gone, right, I'm going to go to new enters, and then suddenly they were 3 seconds a lap faster, then that would have been great. But actually, there wasn't enough wet on the track to make the inters work. You'd have to cool them down. The inters didn't have to clear a lot of moisture. And then finally, when Russell went, all right, whatever, I'll go and give it a go on the slicks. Like, it clearly, he lost 25 seconds in two laps. It got warmed up and he was kind of there or thereabouts. And it wasn't until nearly the point of the safety car where he had one fastest sector. But yeah, Kyle, it needed something to work. And I think there was just a unique set of circumstances that meant no, plodding around on your old inters happened to be the right thing.
Yeah, and as was pointed out during the race, I think they're all terrified of what happened in Turkey a couple of years ago with burning up new inters and just graining them where the old ones were better. Now, Lewis did actually say, we think there was a bit of an argument of him wanting to start on older inters which may have helped with getting temperature into them or using them, which I found quite tricky. But yeah, it was slightly missing something. And also, I think what contributed to that was the massive field spread after the restarts. So we've got this ginormous field spread. And I think that was in some way, the cars, for some reason, this is the first time we've seen it with this regulation of cars. They seemed worse following on this sort of street circuit than the older generation did. The field spread after the safety car restarts, I found, was amazing. There was like multiple seconds gap between cars. And I think this is because these cars are very stiff and clumsy. It's like sumo wrestlers turning up to perform ballet. And then the ballet is actually on ice with these overweight and stiff cars. So everyone's being super cautious and they're not actually running that closely together. So I think that kind of hindered some of the action a little bit.
There you go, Chris. That's your first social media clip.
Yeah, we'll be posting that one on Monday. No, I think the wet weather contributed to that, because I think as you saw, as soon as it got onto slicks, everything kind of tightened up a little bit. And I think what we see in the wet as well is that, you know, in the dry, maybe there's a few tenths of a second between the best and the worst driver in the field. In the wet, that multiplies, and you see the likes of, well, normally in wet races, we're talking about Hamilton, Verstappen, Alonso, you know, these true kings of Formula One who are amazing in the wet.
Kobayashi.
And then, whatever. I think that contributed to it slightly.
Matt.
Yeah, well, just to follow up on Kyle's point, I think the primary driver of that difference here will be the lack of traction, the concertina effect, and the fact that the cars are so much more stiffly sprung means that you're just not going to have the same kind of compliance under traction that you would get with the older, much more complex hydraulic suspensions.
Yes, I agree. And the stiffly sprung thing, I think, is the major thing here, because we've lost a lot of the sidewall, the compliance, and a lot of the nice, as you mentioned, the nice suspension tricks. So everybody, as we saw during the race in some quite humorous examples of, if you just snatch a brake, that's it. You are a one-way ticket to carbon fibersville.
So you want us to get straight to the action, do you? I suppose you want us to talk about Perez holding off Leclerc for a victory, his fourth victory in Formula One. You want to talk about Verstappen coming through the field? You want to speak about Hamilton and that squandered potential in this race? No, like the Singapore Grand Prix, this is also a slow burner. And I do just want to talk about the start, because F1's attitude to wet starts is really different. And the thing that perplexed me the most was not that they took a decision to delay the start, because I can understand that. If you feel like the conditions aren't going to be suitable for safe racing, I'm with you. And look, Spa last year, it wasn't great, but it was really chucking it down. 2014 Suzuka is still ringing around in a lot of our heads. So no one here is against safety. What I am against is that when they finally decided it was worth getting going, they then launched into the whole pre-race routine. So the celebrities had to come out, they had to do the national anthem, they had to do the grid walks, which is all fantastic. But they could have just done all of that whilst it was raining, because umbrellas exist. They could have done grid walks. They could have had a gazebo thrown up. I've done that before, and I'm just one dude. I've thrown up a gazebo at the last minute to deal with the rain, Chris. Why did we have to delay? Why couldn't have we just done all of that bump and then gone, right, we're ready to go. As soon as the weather breaks, let's race.
So I agree with you in principle. The only problem is you can't have the cars on the grid, because getting them to the grid involves putting them on the track, and they have to be driven around there. And obviously the track was not in a state to be driven on. You could, if you really, really wanted to be finicky about it, was just push them into the grid slot. And then, but I do agree, the cars should have been ready to go straight away, and we didn't have to faff with so much of this stuff. They say, oh, we're going to get going. And then we spend another half an hour looking at cars in garages.
Matt, what yes. are young drivers for, if not to take absurdly dangerous risks pre-race when you'd want to protect your drivers?
Well, my thing is, maybe we should look at the actual procedures involved and say, is there fat that can be trimmed in the event we would like to get started sooner?
Absolutely. If I could just butt in there. Yeah, I was going to say, they do this in MotoGP. They have what's something called a short start procedure. So when it's been sort of interrupted by rain. They go, right, the short start procedure. Okay, you've only got 2 minutes to get out of the pit lane, or like 3 minutes. Obviously, that wouldn't work with F1, but they could have this short start procedure. They didn't need the full hour procedure to run through the motions, because by the time they started, we'd missed the wet tires. We're already on to intermediate. So they could have said, okay, it's rain affected. We have a short start procedure. You have 30 minutes to get out the pit lane and get on the grid, and then we're going. That's it. But none of this is legislated for or put in the rules. So the teams don't know what to expect. If that was, they could just trigger this procedure and it would cure a lot of these problems.
With W Series, the day before, I think it was, their qualifying was held in horrendous conditions, like much, much worse than what we saw, you know, either in quali or definitely during the race. So now I know those are sort of Formula 3 spec level cars, and the spray off them is not quite as bad. But I think there is definitely room to have the cars out on track a bit earlier.
So not surprisingly, I actually went and looked at the start procedures in the rules.
Ooh, you read things.
I did read things, and they allot 10 minutes for reconnaissance laps.
Mm-hmm.
Then they close the pit lane for 20 minutes for apparently ordering pizza, maybe. I don't really know. Then at 10 minutes, they start to kick people off the grid. So as far as I can tell, you could easily half that time just by getting rid of those middle 20 minutes when you just are letting celebrities wander around and stare at things.
And there's a comment in our live chat room.
Hey, Slackers.
Hello, Slackers. And they're asking, you know, is it an issue of the medical helicopter not being able to fly? No, that is purely, can that helicopter get in the air? And, at Spa last year, for example, was definitely not an issue and wasn't an issue here, because cars would have never even left the garage if that was the case.
All right. Let's get to the action. This is the part where I like to ask Matt, where was that race won and where was that race lost? Okay, Matt. So, oh, sorry. I was going to introduce it with like some fluff. No.
Roll on. Fluff me. Fluff me, baby. Fluff me.
All right. You made it weird. I don't want to do that anymore. Tell me where the race was won and lost.
Okay, fine. It was won. I think at the moment Charles Leclerc off the start hit that puddle, got wheel spin, and Perez took the lead.
Explain. Wheel spin, puddle, what?
Well, according to Benotto, off the start, he got a good start, but in the second phase of acceleration, he encountered standing water. He didn't call it a puddle. And Leclerc picked up wheel spin, which is what allowed Perez to so easily overtake him into turn one.
So Leclerc was on the inside, outside? Was on the outside. Leclerc was on the outside and had Hamilton behind and then had Alonso behind. It was my 12-year-old actually pointed out, looking at the live timings. He said, oh, hang on a minute. Every other car at the front of the pack, Chris, lost a position. So maybe it wasn't just Leclerc.
No, so pole position is always on the racing line, which in the case of Singapore is on the right-hand side of the grid. In the wet, everyone tends to start in second gear anyway, because otherwise they would probably just spin as soon as the lights went out, and they're really short shifting through the gears to null the power so they can just get away. What we have in racing is there's a wet line, a karting line, which is normally off the traditional racing line, which is normally very clean and shiny, but you put a bit of water on top of that, gets super slippery. So you want to be where all the dirt and the rubbish and the debris is off the racing line, which would have been the left-hand side of the grid, which just so happened to all get better starts than everyone on the right-hand side of the grid.
So just to clear that up quickly, Kyle, see if I've got this understanding right, is where you've laid down race rubber, what you're doing is you're effectively taking away the porous nature of the track's ability to get rid of water. So you don't want to be on the part which is normally the best grip. You want to be on the part that doesn't have rubber on it so that the water goes away so that you can get some contact on the concrete.
Yes, it's pretty much exactly that. You're changing the permeability of the track. So it's less porous, but also with the, it's not just the rubber being laid in, you also take the edge off the actual stones, the core of the actual track, and it actually becomes more polished. So then becomes more slippery as well. So yes, a combination of all of them. And we actually saw this in 2017 as well with the pile up at the start. It's because Vettel on the right hand side on pole got a really bad start and went for the insta chop.
Oh, so it's happened before. Onto
Raikkonen. Yeah, so it happened in 2017, the last wet race there.
Nice, nice. Matt, sorry, continue with where the race was won and lost. You basically got as far as puddle and fluffing, and then I've interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
Well, that's okay. I take it as a compliment that I have accurately identified an important point in the race for everyone to talk about.
Okay.
As far as where the race was lost,
yeah,
I'm going to have to go that moment that Leclerc locked up on lap 49, chasing Perez. He'd been putting such immense pressure on the Red Bull driver, and it was a fantastic duel. I mean, I was almost shaking watching it. It was just so tight and wondering if he would get a run. Then he locks up, and from that moment on, he lost almost 8 seconds in 8 laps. Yeah, unbelievable.
I think there were a couple of opportunities for Charles Leclerc to win this race. The first one was keeping Perez at bay off the line. Obviously, it didn't work. And then the second one was when his car just sort of seemed to come alive right after the safety car restart, yes, when they'd just gone on to slicks, and Perez was struggling a little bit with his brakes. He was locking up
with
a little bit more.
And
the drivability he was talking about as well, which I think was just an engine setting. So Leclerc had an opportunity then to pounce, and he had to just be so precise, because when you're racing on a drying track, you've got a very narrow dry line, and as soon as you get onto the damp part of the track, you lose all that tire temperature and you can fly off the racetrack. And we saw so many drivers fall into that trap, and Leclerc just needed to be so neat and tidy and just wait for one small opportunity. But unfortunately, he was the one who ended up making the mistake more than once.
Yeah, and then there are those who might say that the race was really won in the steward's office afterwards.
Oh, boo. Okay. We have definitely laid the groundwork here for some topics. I'm not ready to answer the safety car questions yet. And I won't pretend to be neutral. I won't pretend to be impartial when it comes to Sergio Perez, because when you follow a midfield driver, Matt, the rewards, they're few and far between. And when your favourite midfield driver becomes number two to the reigning world champion in a team notorious for favouring their number one, you've got to enjoy these moments, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. And nothing away from Perez, aside from the legalities of it all, he won that race. It was a genuinely brilliant drive from him in conditions that that were challenging for people who were multiple world champions. Let's just say it.
Do you remember when did Ocon win a race? What race was that?
Hungary.
Hungaroring last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, last year. And do you remember I WhatsApped you as the race was finishing simply because I just wanted to see how you were taking it. And I just watched like your joy building as it got over the line. And it was just wonderful to watch. My reaction to Perez winning, slightly different. My 12-year-old hid under a blanket by the time the race finished. And he poked his head out and he went, "Dad, is it over yet? Is it over yet?" I went, yeah, it's over. Chris.
That's so sweet. Now, I have to say this, because Perez, this was easily his best win in Formula One. And even if there is a tiny amount of controversy about it because of this safety car 10 lengths
no, there isn't.
Thing. No, but it was 100% his best win. The day where he had a world-class drive, and on a day where you could compare him to Schumacher, to Hamilton, or to, you know, anyone. If you saw more days like that, he would be, you know, a championship contender, but they're not there every single day. But easily his best win in Formula One.
I completely agree. This is his first sort of full merit win, if that sounds, maybe that's a bit harsh. Maybe that's a bit harsh, but there was no accentuating circumstances. There was no crazy safety cars. He made a gamble. He wasn't sort of inherited the lead or anything. He absolutely nailed it from the start. He barely put a foot wrong, and he soaked up intense pressure from Leclerc. It was very, very, very impressive.
What about when he defeated the mighty Lance Stroll at Istanbul, and Stroll was leading that race and he usurped him because he deliberately made Stroll have a mysterious front wing problem? I think that there's some of the Perez wins were better than this, but like you look at Monaco this season and you go, okay, that was kind of gifted. But like today as well, there was a bit of luck because Verstappen had the problems in qualifying that put him to the back. Even as a Perez fan, I do appreciate that there was quite a few extenuating circumstances that made him lead to this win. So if it was a track where overtaking was significantly easier, I think like on raw performance, Leclerc probably had it today. If there was a little bit more room for overtaking, Verstappen was going to get pole over Perez had he not had that issue with fuel. But when it came to the execution and the defending and the car placement and the keeping it calm and overcoming problems, yeah, I think you can't deny that that is, you know, a good race win. But also, just a little footnote, Kyle, there have been lots of times where there was a win that was to be his that got taken away or given to someone else where he raced better. And I've seen better Perez performances. I just don't want to over-egg it.
Well, that was actually going to be my point, because I think we could have seen this performance in Jeddah at the start of the year when he looked, I think, and he got completely utterly stitched up by the safety car. I don't think Spain. I think Spain, it was gone already. But
no,
in Jeddah,
shut
we
up.
Would have seen it. Another street circuit, and he put in such a... Yeah, I think it was the safety car was really unlucky to him this time. So I think this is the performance we would have seen earlier in the year, and what that would have done with his confidence, nobody can say. But it was mightily impressive. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't sitting there thinking, right, the mistake is coming soon. It's going to come soon, and it's going to come soon, because he was under so much pressure, and it was so tricky. He was having to push so hard, particularly when he's having the drivability problems, having Larry sort of squirrely moments on the out, getting out of the corners, and I'm just like, right, the next couple of corners, he's going to stuff it into the wall, and he didn't. And then just to testament to his pace, he absolutely, when he got given full Wang mode at the end and said, you have to go away, like you actually have to full bananas, he absolutely like romped away from Leclerc. So yeah, I think he had Leclerc covered on pace throughout the race, to be honest.
Okay, if Hugh Bird comes on the radio and goes, okay, Checo, it's time for full Wang mode, we will know for sure that he listens in to Missed Apex podcast. I think that sort of a shameful thing, shameful secret of a Perez fan, Chris, is that, as Kyle says, I was starting to suspect that Perez might be a little bit of a street circuit specialist. And as a Perez fan who hates all street circuits, that was it's like a little, you know, let's not say that out too loud.
You're going to have to come around eventually.
Yeah.
But that call to pull the 5-second gap won them the race as well.
Sure.
They had the force to do that on a weekend where Red Bull made their first major blunder of the season with Verstappen in qualifying. They absolutely made the right call.
Okay, so we're going to have to go to the safety car penalty. Should it have been a penalty? Should it have been a harsher penalty? Me and Kyle disagree. So here's how it's going to work. Matt, I would like you to detail the situation and the penalty that came about. We will give Kyle the opportunity to be wrong, and then I'll correct him. I think that's how it will work the best.
Okay, well, as we all know, there were not one, but count them two, penalties assessed against Perez for safety car violations. In the first safety car period, because I like to go in chronological order occasionally, he fell more than 10 lengths behind the safety car while its lights were illuminated. And when I say more than 10 car lengths, I don't mean like 10.3. I mean like it's 5 corners ahead kind of distance behind. So much so that Lewis Hamilton radioed the team and said, whoa, dudes, what's up with that?
Reckless driving by the safety car, Chris. Bert Mylander needs to be stopped. He should be the one getting a reprimand. Why is he going so fast?
Well, I think what we need to also just clarify as well is that this is not on a restart. This is in the middle of the safety car period. Obviously, once those lights go out and you see the race leader back everyone up, that's allowed. That's all part of the system. That's what you're meant to do. This was in the middle of the safety car period when they should be following it closely.
Chris annoyingly makes the correct point that the 10-length rule is for when the safety car lights are illuminated. Once they go out, the driver leading the pack becomes the de facto safety car and is in charge of the restart once they pass whatever the first safety car line, I forget what it is, or the safety cars in the pits. But we have him far behind, dead to rights, called into the steward's office and defending himself with the following information. My brakes were cold and it was wet, so I couldn't keep up with the safety car.
Oh, mate, I've definitely used that excuse skipping a traffic light. Okay, Kyle, you are of the opinion that Sergio Perez is kind of lucky to get away with that. Please, make the case for the prosecution.
Well, I didn't say I wanted him to get a penalty. I just think he's a very, very, very lucky boy that he didn't. Because I thought from when I saw it, when they replayed it just shortly after the race, I was like, that is an absolute slam dunk. Because it wasn't, you know, I'd argue if it was slightly on the fringe and it was slightly tight, okay. But the first one, he was miles by. Yeah, he couldn't even see the safety car. It was miles, miles ahead. And he used that opportunity to absolutely, you know, push really hard in the next couple of corners to get some heat into the tyres. That's exactly why they do it. It wasn't an accident. And then the second one through the final sector, which is when he also said in his defence that it was wet in the final sector and I was really struggling. This is when he was on slicks. He fell really far behind it and then absolutely, as again, I'll say again, he went full wang through the final corner.
Full wang.
To get loads of heat into his tyres. So it was very, very intentional. And what adds to it, even worse, he was warned on the first one. Race Direction warned him. Then they did it twice, apparently. So Matt said, I mean, they warned him twice and then they did it again. So the fact that they've said, yeah, you're guilty, but we're only going to penalise you for one. And also, it happened so early in the race that they could have applied that 5-second penalty in the race, and they should have done, which would have had a drastic effect on the result, I think, because he would have had to apply that at the pit stop. So, yeah, I think he is incredibly, incredibly lucky to get away with only a reprimand and a 5-second penalty.
One thing's for sure, Matt, is that Full Wang has now joined the cherry hook of Missed Apex nomenclature.
Yeah, Full Wang is the cherry hook of Missed Apex.
It might be. In a way, maybe you and I are the cherry hook in the Full Wangness of all Missed Apexness.
Yes, indeed. So if I may clarify before you rise to the defense of Checo.
I've got a list.
Incident, there was one case where he was that far behind, and that was the one where he received the reprimand. For the second safety car period, he was warned by the race director for being too far behind first.
Yeah.
And then subsequently dinged again before the safety car came in for letting it go far, far, far away from him. And if I may, a personal note, I do agree with Kyle that these decisions would have been much better rendered during the race rather than post-race. But that's a personal note. All right.
We'll get
time
there
for defense.
We'll get there. Chris first.
1,000% that should have been investigated in the middle of the race. It didn't even start being investigated until way later. I guess when the third offense finally happened, but it should have happened sooner. What I don't like about it is that it's a safety matter, which we all take very seriously. The gap creates, you know, two pockets of cars when there should only be one. The whole reason of the safety car is to get the field together so that if marshals are on the racetrack, they have a nice big window to get the job done before the cars come back round and they maybe have to take shelter again just in case someone goes off. What it also did was that it meant he was practically speeding under the safety car to catch it back up again, when he should have been right behind it, and therefore increasing the odds of everyone going off in very difficult conditions. Why are we not taking a more serious stance against this?
All right, I've been patient there. I've listened to all of you speak, which is, you know, against a lot of the YouTube comments are always saying, like, you need to interrupt your panel more. You need to get on top of them. You need to cut them off when they're wrong and give them your opinion, Spanners. Okay, so you're absolutely right. We need to get those decisions. We need to get those decisions made in race. Every other sport, cricket, football, NFL, lacrosse, they've all got like a video screen and they've got one person whose job it is to look at the video and go, yeah, I reckon they're out. Yeah, that was LBW. That was a good catch. That was great kickball, presumably, they say in NFL. Get one person who's the referee. That's different to a steward. A steward might deal with, I don't know, discipline issues, or a race control deals with the good running of the race. But there's no reason to not have an umpire, one referee, a video referee. And you go, right, we're referring that specifically to the video referee. That video referee today would have had 40 minutes to make the decision. And you just go, okay, tell you what, that's your decision. Unless any other decisions come in, don't watch the rest of the race. because you only need to watch the specific incidents that we're going to give you evidence for and then make a call. That happens in every sport. Make a call. There's no need for these decisions to go, oh, it's going to wait until the end of the race or the end of the budget cap review. Just make the decisions there and then. But, okay, why is Kyle wrong? That's interesting. So, firstly, the 10 car length rule. That's a little bit wishy-washy. They may as well say, oh, it's 42 hands long. Or it's 8 horse tails. It's the wording of that rule says to me, it's not really a precise number. It's more of a guideline. So can we just chill out and have no more of this Perez shouldn't have won this race talk, Kyle? Secondly, there is precedent for this in that I don't remember any time that anyone got anything more than a warning for dropping more than 10 cars behind. And I don't want to hear evidence to the, oh, you've got examples, haven't you? Gosh, damn it. Okay, so lastly, in my defence is, well, I think if you can name an example, I'm wrong. Go on then, Kyle, name an example.
Vettel in 2010 in Hungary, and that wasn't even the safety car, that was behind his own teammate, but the rule states behind another car.
So not behind the safety car.
It's the same rule. It's the same rule, and it also states in the rule, the regulation, that it's behind the safety car or the next car in the line. Vettel got penalized, he got a drive through, and I believe Hamilton also got a drive through penalty for it in Valencia the same year. So it's happened twice and they've both been slam dunk drive throughs.
The reason you can't remember an example of its banners is because it hasn't happened in ages, because it's a stupid rule to breach. I know it's a bit vague.
You're right, it's a stupid rule. Let's leave it there.
I know it's a bit vague, but it was very clearly more than 10 car lengths.
Okay. There.
What it is don't fall too far behind the safety car. Don't take the mick with it, because it was ridiculous. Well beyond.
My final thing that I think was bad about this is the fact that the decision was made afterwards. Yes, you're right. There could be a mechanism to do it in the race. But what that meant was the stewards could check and see the outcome of the race. So if Perez makes a 5-point gap, which he did, it makes it very easy for the stewards. They could either do a warning and a 5-second penalty like they did. They could do just a warning. And it makes no difference whatsoever. They don't have to actively affect the outcome of the race. If that gap had been less than 5 seconds, I'm going to call it now. Had that gap been 4.9 seconds, I think there is no 5-second penalty. I think that is a strongly worded reprimand and nothing more. These decisions have to be made before the consequences are known.
I love the defensive. I don't remember murdering that guy, so I didn't do it.
Matt.
Yeah, well, I actually agree with you regarding the decisions. I mean, we all accept there can be circumstances where decisions have to be made post-race. If it happens on the last lap, you're not going to get a decision. But for something like that, that happened twice and early on, there is no excuse to put it off till the end of the race, except for we might be concerned about the consequences on the racing order as it exists right now. And regarding your defense, the thing that I would like you to speak to is the fact that it happened twice. I could accept a reprimand for the first time, but the fact that there was a warning the second time and then it happened again makes me think that it was intentional all along. And I don't like that personally.
I think it, whether it was intentional or not, that's the thing. So it wasn't as if it was marginal. And as I said, if it was just slightly marginal and it slightly dropped back and was probably truthful to his explanation, which was complete codswallop, I think, by the way, if you actually read it, it's just like, that's absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. If it was marginal, it'd be fair enough. Let him go. Let that slide, because it is a bit silly. And as Spanners rightfully points out, it's a bit woolly, the 10 car lengths. I mean, you could actually extrapolate it and actually look at it and measure it. You could do that, but it's hard to say a time. You can't count it in time, because the time will be variable of how fast the safety car is. So you have to do it on slightly woolly 10 car lengths, but it's pretty obvious and visual. The fact that this was done and it was so blatant both sort of times, and I don't think they gained a huge advantage of it. It was just willfully just kind of ignoring the rule, even though you've been warned and other competitors are calling you out on it. So that's why I think they're incredibly lucky to escape penalty. Now, would I be happy if he had his magnificent race win taken away from him? Probably not. No. Would I be happy if the rules were applied properly in the race? Then yeah, because I think maybe he would have hunted Leclerc down, and with that straight line advantage, we could have had an absolute cracking ending to the Grand Prix.
And I think we did have a cracking ending to that Grand Prix, to be honest, Chris. And that's where I wanted to go next, was Leclerc's challenge. I think there were different alternate universes of this race where Leclerc is a Grand Prix winner today.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, certainly got the job done in qualifying with a, you know, like it was so close, like the half a tenth between the top three, and just getting it absolutely right and getting the ninth pole position of the season. This is probably the one he really should have converted, though. But like we were saying earlier, there's just a couple small mistakes are what really cost him.
See, I have doubts. I'll be honest. I think this is a race that was going to go to Perez as long as he didn't make mistakes. And my sense of that is based on the end of the race in the dry, which is Leclerc chasing Perez with DRS, not able to get round him in the DRS zones, and then unable to keep up with him once his tires started to go. I think if you change those positions around with Perez in the Red Bull, I think Perez gets around him either sooner under DRS or later, because Leclerc has again blown up his tires trying to stay ahead. And this is a problem Ferrari has had since we've come back after the summer break.
Now, I'll tell you what, it was one corner that was screwing Charles Leclerc. Let's be real. The only proper overtaking opportunity Charles had available to him was turn seven. It was never realistically going to happen anywhere else. And in order to do that, he had to be very good out of turn three after that first couple of complex of corners, and then stick close with him through the right hander that led onto the straight. But he kept losing time to Perez, either through bad traction or making a small mistake. That was just enough that Perez was just far enough ahead going into the DRS zone that Leclerc couldn't attack him down into turn seven. It was that one corner in particular that was really screwing him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you picked up on it there. It was the traction, which from what I saw is the traction where he seemed to really, really, really struggle. And of course, added to that, coupled with that, a slight straight line speed deficit. But I think the straight line speed deficit was mainly, you know, it was exaggerated by the lack of traction. And it was kind of the traction moment, or going into the corner too hot and then can't get out of it again, which kind of lost him the DRS sort of anyway. So he was having to over sort of push into the corners, knowing he's got bad traction. So he's probably pushing too hard into the corners to try to make up for that. And that was a shame. But yeah, I think if Perez was behind Leclerc, I think Perez probably would have got him still.
So who do we think had the better car out of those two, Matt? Like, was Perez probably had the better race car?
Yeah, I think Perez had the fastest car on the track in these conditions today. Yeah. Well, I mean, Verstappen might have actually had the fastest car, but then we won't know the answer to that question, will we? But of the two, I think he had the car advantage over Leclerc a little bit, yes.
It was infuriating about Verstappen. How many times did he light up the timing screen, not just in the race, but in qualifying as well? Oh, I'm about to set a pole lap that's 8.7 seconds quicker than everyone else's. And like, we never got to see it.
I have to say, I love the fact that both those drivers were definitely pushing it towards the end of the race in challenging conditions. They were both losing it. Perez, I could probably count maybe three times where he locked the outside left. I don't know what corner it was at. But he was clearly struggling. He seemed to be missing the apex into the bridge every single time Leclerc was catching him through there. And Leclerc was more losing the back end. So it felt like Perez was struggling to get the front stopped and turned in. But Leclerc was struggling under traction. And it was like watching like 90s racing, Matt. It was like watching Damon Hill versus Schumacher.
Yeah, it really was. And if we're going to talk about this, I just want to take a brief moment to raise a glass to George Russell's exit from the pit lane on the slick tires.
It was so good. Thing is, that is youth, though, because I think there's a lot of drivers who would have had that and gone, nope, no, 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 back in we go. But he was like, no, it's fine. I've got this. I can handle it. I can definitely do it.
I could literally hear him screaming "wee" inside his helmet as he went out.
So that happened one time with me. I hooked up me and my son pit lane to helmet comms in karting. He'd completely forgotten that we were connected. He went round a hairpin, got a slide on, and he literally went "wee" all the way round. But who knows? Maybe George Russell was doing that. But Leclerc, look. I like seeing him push. This isn't his season. I don't think it is going to be his season. But that was. you know, that was great to see him battling and pushing hard on a track that's so hard to overtake on, where I think you probably needed a 3 or 4 second delta to overtake. So maybe that overtake was really never on. Have to say, had a late entry here from Mateus in our Slack chat, who points to the 2022 Canadian Grand Prix, where Sebastian Vettel was found guilty of failing to keep within 10 car lengths of the car in front under safety car conditions. No further action. So, check and mate. No, no, no. Come on, if you've got a comeback to that, you can have a comeback to that. But that's quite a recent example. So if this season Vettel didn't get a penalty, kind of seems fair, seems reasonably consistent. I still feel like if he had 4.99 seconds, they would have copied and pasted that exact stewards report. Okay, let's go to Max Verstappen, who could have wrapped up the title this weekend. But Chris, a little bit of a miserable weekend, all starting in qualifying.
It always seems to be in whatever series you're watching, as soon as there's the opportunity to wrap up the title, things just seem to go really, really wrong for that person. I remember when I was a Formula E journalist, I think John Eric Verne had a chance to wrap up a title quite early, and just everything that you could think of to go wrong went wrong for him. And it was the case for Max Verstappen this weekend, while he was, what, a second up on Charles Leclerc's pole time, and yeah, Red Bull haven't put enough fuel in the car. What? Now, that is their first major blunder.
No, hang
blunder
on. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. And you're right, it is their first major blunder. Well, but
it is more complicated than that, most definitely.
Yeah. So the lap times were really fascinating, as it was a drying track. You had Alonso popping up and going to pole twice, and you know he would have absolutely been loving that. Hamilton was frequently going up to pole, Leclerc. Verstappen, it never quite happened throughout that run. So this is what I'm saying. It might be a little bit more complicated than that. He was lighting up the sectors, Chris, but he never put that like killer lap in. And considering
he kept abandoning them.
Yeah, he kept abandoning them. But had he completed any of those final two laps, I think he was like a second and a half on pole. It would have been a devastating lap. Yeah. But for whatever reason, he didn't nail any of them. And then eventually they had to say, no, we're not going to have enough fuel to comply with the regulations pull in.
Yeah, so he would have abandoned that penultimate lap thinking he had enough fuel to do one more. This will be the one. Because if it's not perfect, I'm just going to go for the perfect lap a bit later. And why we saw this happen was because they were fueled up for the entire session. Mm. Normally, Q3 comes out, they do one flying lap, come back in, get a bit more fuel in, then they do their last flying lap. But here, because of the changing conditions, they had to keep them out on track throughout the entire session. And it's very difficult to calculate the fuel when the pace is so varying, because we saw the first laps, it was Tsunoda on the intermediates who was quickest. And then the slicks started to come in and they were dropping seconds per lap. And so it was very difficult to actually calculate how much fuel you'll need. And they realized two corners before the pit lane that Verstappen wasn't going to make it to have the fuel sample needed, which is a mandatory requirement. Otherwise, you get chucked out of quali. So it was just far better for them to accept that they weren't going to be on pole, start in eighth place, rather than risk being excluded from qualifying.
What I couldn't figure out was, because he aborted his first, which would have probably been the pole lap. So his penultimate lap. Now, that must have been a conscious decision just on his own, off his own back, because the team must have sort of known they were going to be tight at this point, and they surely would have wanted him to bank that. So I haven't heard anything. I wonder if there's a breakdown in the communication. So basically, the team has to own the mistake. Yeah. But surely there would have been like, don't back off, cash this lap, and then get the next one. Like, but I think he must have taken a decision himself to back out of that lap to quickly charge his battery. But he only backed out with about three corners left. So he couldn't have done that much battery charge anyway. So I'm really surprised at that. So I think that was his own decision. And the team were like, oh no, but they should have told him pretty much straight away. Like maybe try and even lisp and coast during the lap if they thought it was going to be that tight. But as we saw in 2012 in Barcelona, Hamilton had the pole taken away from him. So they know they need to have that liter.
Chris, you were trying to get in there. Sorry.
Well, it's happened on other occasions as well. Sebastian Vettel the same year in Abu Dhabi. It doesn't just account for the pole cars. It's every single car. So I don't know why he abandoned that penultimate lap, because it looked okay as far as we were concerned. I mean, I can only imagine that it would have been just to get that last little bit of battery for the last lap, because obviously they deplete the battery quite a lot in a hot qualifying lap.
Right, okay.
So it's need to take a lap to recharge.
It's good though, isn't it? Like, Verstappen's going to win, but it's good that it hasn't been wrapped up like so quickly. And I believe that if Leclerc wins in Suzuka, it won't be wrapped up either. And it goes to the Americas, which will be fine. I think that'll be good entertainment. But actually, Matt, Verstappen's misery did not end in qualifying.
No, in fact, it did not. If we go to the start of the race, he didn't have the car in the correct mode for the start and picked up a massive anti-stall and then got some contact, I believe, with Magnussen off the start, which just made his life even more entertaining than it had previously been.
Oh, actually, before we move on, I just have to say about the radio calls. So I think that him kicking off the team for that mistake is completely fine. There you go. Just going to say that. But can we also apply that to when other drivers kick off and just say, yeah, that's completely fine. So that's all I wanted to say on that. But yeah, so at the start, Matt, he sort of Hamiltoned, which is the term I'm using
yep.
for being in some sort of bizarre, incorrect mode. So he Hamiltoned the start and then he lost like four or five places from that. And actually, he ended up colliding with Magnussen. So that is why Magnussen had the end plate issue. I didn't catch that incident. Whose fault was that incident? Do we know? Oh, is there an argument?
It was Max's. It was Max's. Yeah. He okay. squeezed Kevin up against that wall. Okay. He was very lucky not to get pitched round himself.
In that case,
whose fault is it?
It was Verstappen's. In that case, it was super cheeky that Verstappen was then on the radio calling that, oh, he's got to be meatball flagged, a phrase which Alex Brundle invented, by the way. He's got to be meatball flagged. Because that end plate is going to come off and hit us. That is cheeky as heck when you're the one who caused that incident. I didn't realize that. So there you go.
Well, if you look at the job he did against Vettel and then subsequently Alonso, you might understand why he was trying to get Magnussen off the track as quickly as possible. Even he was having a really hard time overtaking those midfielders in these conditions.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Kyle, that was a good defense from Magnussen in the end.
Yeah. What, against Max?
Against Max, yeah. Shut
the
door.
Against Max. He only got sort of moved out of the way after the pit stop, wasn't it? He had to pit to get everything, which was a shame, because actually he put that Haas into Q3, which is an amazing achievement, and actually looked the biggest. So that was actually really unfortunate for him. But yeah, again, it probably was, I just caught a glimpse of it. It probably was Max's fault again. But as we know with K-Mag, he's not exactly one to move aside easily, is he, on the first lap? He doesn't exactly put self-preservation first when it comes wheel-to-wheel racing.
A few of our Danes and our Magnussen fans in our Slack group were saying, hey, look, there is an inconsistency here. Haas have been called up 3 times with meatball flags for end plates, and they have seen examples where other cars with similar end plates issues have not been, you know, taken off track. And I accept that. I think that has been a bit of a funny one. But you also have to ask yourself, Kevin Magnussen fans, why does Kevin Magnussen keep ending up with end plate issues and in tussles? He has been very, very aggressive this year. I'm not bemoaning that. I'm just saying, Kyle, if you drive like Magnussen does and you defend like he does, that's great, Tally. It's probably good racing. It does come with a risk.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know he's super fighty and will not give an inch, regardless if he knows the car behind him.
Yeah, exactly.
Max Verstappen is
it could be Concorde. It could be Concorde. Yeah. And he would
exactly. And he hasn't, and he wouldn't. But the problem is with the sort of race direction now, once a competitor has called that out and said, I don't think it's very safe and it's dangerous, they're kind of a bit painted into a corner then, because if, God forbid, the wing does fly off and conk someone on the head, they're going to look really bad because they've been warned. So they kind of have to act. And it's a bit of a strange situation now. So I'm surprised we don't see this more of everyone saying it, because as soon as they've told the teacher, essentially what it is, because, oh, look, their wing's broken, the race direction kind of have to intervene. And they were I'm pretty sure they were just about to intervene on Mercedes as well until they made the pit stop, because they had to, really. Obviously, it would have been unfair treatment, wouldn't it?
Yep, exactly the point I was going to make. He radioed the same thing in when Hamilton drove into the wall, which we'll get to later, and was full wanging it around on the cherry hook.
On the cherry hook, yeah. Hanging off. By the way, I just have to correct, because a few people are saying, oh, I thought meatball flag was a real phrase. It is a real phrase, but on the UK Sky commentary, Martin Brundle just casually mentioned, oh, my son calls that the meatball flag, implying that his son had invented it. Not really acknowledging that his son is also an internationally recognised commentator and race car driver, who then had to go onto Twitter to deny claims that he was claiming that he had invented the term meatball flag. And I just found that the most endearing and sweet and lovely thing. So that's what I was referring to there. Chris?
Yeah, we love Alex. All the best for the WEC finale in Bahrain, if you're listening, which obviously you are. on Max, he had a very, very calm, cool, and collected 90 minutes of that race where he didn't do ridiculous dives and super optimistic moves. It was very calculated how he was sort of making his way through the field right up until they got onto slick tires and he absolutely full wanged it into the escape road.
Matt. Yeah, and that move.
Oh, sorry, go on, Carl, go on.
I was going to say, yeah, and that move, particularly the one on Norris, yeah, looked really, really tricky. And you could almost see this happening in slow motion. As soon as it happened, I was like, he's going to shove that up the inside and he is not going to stop. As soon as you saw that, it's like, no, there was an inevitability about it. But yeah. I was kind of almost shocked because, let's face it, Max this year has, apart from spinning in the Hungary race, has not really made a mistake, and it seemed almost superhuman at times.
So, hang on, didn't he have an off Red Bull
Barcelona?
Oh, yes, actually, in Barcelona,
it's really his third one.
It is, but that's it. But he's almost looked robotic in his performances. So it was kind of almost a bit humbling to see, he is human, he does make mistakes like everyone else is today.
Yeah, there was just this little sort of puff of spray that he managed to run over while going off the lines. And what we were talking about earlier with Leclerc, you just put one wheel into that and you lose all your tire temperature. But I know that Matt's got a theory as well about why he locked both fronts so suddenly.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. I think it looked way worse than it actually was. You watched it and you're like, oh, he was never going to stop that car. Yeah. I mean, just massive clouds of smoke coming off the front tires. It just looked epically bad. It was never on for that to happen. But actually, he hit a bump. There's a bump there, and I don't think he was aware of it. And the moment you hit that bump and it puts your front wheels in the air under braking, which is with the cars being this stiff, what happens? Both of those lock. And so when they come back down on the asphalt, you're under full lock and you cannot stop the car at that point, especially being offline on wet asphalt. So I do have to defend him here. It was a mistake, but it was not the kind of mistake at all like it looked. It was well within his power, minus that bump, I think, to maybe make that move stick. Because he's the only person I can recall making a successful overtake in the first half of the race anyway.
And it's a pretty significant bump as well, because Norris was told later in the race to avoid it by any means necessary because it was doing something to the car.
Whose fault is it?
Oh, little quick one while it's come to my brain. Latifi and Joe. Oh, God. Go on, Chris.
I need to get in there. How dare Joe think he can try and take on my favorite driver? Who does he think he is?
Oh, that was just the worst, though, because Joe has been having, you know, a good run, and he's just got his new contract. So you kind of go, for him to just go down the inside of Latifi, and for Latifi to not even realize or recognize that he was there, that's pretty upsetting for everyone involved.
I do have a genuine defense, which is that in the wet condition, those mirrors are pretty useless anyway, but in the wet conditions, you may as well not even have them. You cannot see a thing.
Okay. Kyle.
What is it that you say in some of our race direction briefing notes for our sim racing? If you think there might be somebody on the inside, outside,
exactly, yeah,
there probably is. And he would have known that, because hence he was already taking a semi sort of defensive positioning. I believe they call it the primary position for cyclists on the road, where you sort of set yourself up defensively, knowing someone was there. So he knew he was slightly under attack. I think it was just, you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, because I think it was just a bit sloppy, and he's concentrating on a corner in difficult conditions, and he's, don't think he's meant to drift over that far. He said he didn't see him. I think he did know he was there. He just was a bit sloppy and didn't mean to drift over quite that far.
I can remember being taught to drive by my dad. And I can remember making a right-hand turn and being yelled at for starting to drift into the left-hand lane a bit, because it was a two-lane going the same direction. It's a real human instinct to want to widen that corner.
Sure.
And that is absolutely what I think caught Latifi out. I don't think he was even aware he was doing it, because as you said, I think he was really just at that point focused on the apex and trying to get the dry line or the driest line through that turn, and just was fully unaware of Joe being next to him.
But Chris, as a Latifi, as the Latifi fan, I assume you were hoping that you'd get, you know, to the end of the season cleanly. It is just another chalk mark on the wall, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't have very high hopes going into this race, because I knew it's already the hardest Grand Prix of the year. When they say that this is the one they train for, they really mean it, because it is one of the most physically demanding shit, because of the length of it, because it usually almost always goes to the full 2 hour limit, but the humidity, and then you throw in the difficult conditions as well. It was always going to be one of those races where someone like Nicky was going to struggle.
Okay, because you have to be at the highest possible level at one of the hardest tracks in the world to compete. And whilst we're on Williams, briefly, I just want to say, whoever is in charge of like driver management or HR or whatever at Williams, you could have given Albon the weekend off. He did an amazing job getting himself ready to be back to be an F1 Grand Prix driver at the hardest physical racetrack ever. And I wonder how much he felt a pressure to go, Nick De Vries did brilliantly, I'd best get back in my F1 car. Someone needed to just put an arm around his shoulder and go, dude, we think you're pretty brilliant at driving F1 cars. We also think Nick De Vries is pretty good at driving F1 cars. Between you and I, you not being here at Singapore isn't going to make a difference. You were being resuscitated a couple of weeks ago. Just chill out. We'll see you in Kota. We'll see you in Mexico. Everyone wants to get in here. So Kyle, Chris, then Matt.
It was a very good effort. And yeah, kudos and hats off to it. But MotoGP riders looking over and think, that's cute. That's
really cute. With your motorbikes. Chris, I made the wrong decision going to Kyle first.
Maybe he should have let Nick the Free drive, because there is no way
He looked as good.
Delivered as he did on the Monza hype. And no one would want to put him in a F1 seat anymore.
Oh, well, there you go. Underhanded, Matt.
Well, it occurs to me that I might actually have a mitigating circumstance for our friend Latifi.
Oh, really?
Mr. Apex's favorite driver
in
a Williams that's not going to be in a Williams next year.
100%.
Is that they have struggled all season, apparently, to get his steering wheel properly centered. And it's not. So his steering wheel literally does not sit straight. It's off center.
Is this
Now, maybe this is just how much regard they have for him and the team, but it was reported on F1 TV as I was watching the pre-race that they've had an issue with it and they've not been able to sort it out. So his steering wheel doesn't point straight when he drives straight. And I could see that maybe playing into this kind of accident a little bit, if I'm being honest.
I knew it. I knew Williams was against him as a corrupt team. They favor Albon. They were never going to let him do anything.
To be honest, I'd be going on the Williams live web chat. Because like the customer service there is appalling. For 20 million, you think you could get online, speak to, you know, someone in a Danish call center and say, hey, I would like my steering wheel straightened. I'm not buying that as an excuse, except for that Mick Schumacher had made complaints that he was wonky, like his body's wonky, and he struggles to get straight in any kind of race seat. I also struggle with getting my sim rig to be straight. And it turns out, as much as I don't want to admit this, my arms are not the same length. And that has been causing me a great deal of problems. Okay, so I think that takes us actually to the Mercedes drivers. And I am a fan of Mercedes. I like the way they do things. Matt, I like the cut of their jib, I would go as far as to say. I think both their drivers fell below the standards that they would want to set.
And at least one of them was willing to admit it.
Oh, really? Which one admitted?
Well, I'm pretty sure Hamilton admitted that it was his fault he drove straight into a wall.
Okay, yeah, it's a fair cop, that. But look, okay, we can start with Hamilton, because Russell, he's earlier in his career. My expectations of him are, you know, just lower in general, because, you know, I'm not invested in 12 years of following him. But I've been a Hamilton fan for a very long time, and I think I am more critical of Lewis Hamilton than I am of other drivers. Stop laughing, Verstappen fans. I think it's true, and that's all that matters as far as this podcast is concerned. This season, I have started to see a few chinks. In fact, in the 2021 season, we had a lot of criticisms about how he approached things, about how he treated Max Verstappen a little bit with kid gloves. And that was carried over from 2019. He said, well, Verstappen hasn't got a title to drive for, so I should give him a bit more room. And that kind of extended into the early part of 2021. So it's not like we're not critical of Lewis Hamilton on this podcast, Silverstone aside. But, right, this season, I'm starting to see things that I go, oh, that's not what I've come to expect from Hamilton. Obviously, we had Spa. We had the inconsistencies in the experimental phase of trying to get rid of the porpoising. And then in one weekend, we've seen loads of like not Hamilton-esque type stuff. So like not really nailing that final qualifying lap to get a pole that was there. Finally a pole this year. And if he'd have got pole, a win is genuinely on the cards. And then just, you know, obviously that crash there, the misjudgment under braking, under, you know, trying to overtake Vettel towards the end as well, losing it, you know, behind Carlos Sainz, Chris. As Hamilton fans, I'm sure I'm not the only one that's just starting to go, well, I don't want to be too dramatic. I'm just saying there's more mistakes. It's not the Hamilton of 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Yeah. Did Lewis Hamilton's best years come at a time where he didn't need to prove himself as much as maybe he needed to last year or this year?
Yeah, 100%. But that's not what I was going to say.
Oh, okay. With me strongly and then move on.
Well, for Lewis, you know, it kind of snowballed for him, really, didn't it? And he ended up in a position similar to Russell where there was a bit of desperation. It's funny, I ran a poll on the Mist Apex Twitter after qualifying yesterday, so who was going to win the race, and the options were the top three and or someone else. Only 5% said Perez, but 47% said Lewis, and that was the winning margin. We were so convinced this was going to be Mercedes weekend, and it just started to fall apart.
I feel
well,
like
you're right. It definitely could have been if he was on pole. Falling behind Sainz wrecked his race because Sainz was, in terms of pace, a bit of a train wreck this weekend. So he fell massively behind the race leaders and then obviously makes that one mistake that snowballs into a bunch of other mistakes.
Yeah, what I would say is, like, Lewis Hamilton has obviously made mistakes all throughout his career, but on those marginal risk-reward, you know, did it come off this time kind of situations, more of them used to come off. Whereas now, maybe not as many of them are starting to come off, Kyle.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of this, just what's just been said. Also, we kind of need to look back at, you know, when he was at his height, he used to get a lot of the rubber to green as well with safety cars. And now it's not quite as high. Every single one seems to massively go against him. So I think he's maybe one of these little, I think he will bounce back, but I think he's having one of these sort of maybe wobble seasons, like Schumacher in 2005. Like, you know, when all of a sudden there's some funny crashes, strange mistakes creep in, the decisions and safety cars doesn't really go his way. I think basically all of the good stuff that's happened to him and all the good performances, I think that's all been kind of cashed in, and now he's getting all of the bad luck and getting it all sort of done. It's weird. Everything seems to be snowballing and going wrong all at the same point.
It does seem to be, yeah. I have to say, I'm getting grief from the Hamfosi in our Patreon Slack group saying, hey, people make mistakes. Max made mistakes today. I know. But I will say, like, I'm more focused on Lewis Hamilton from a fan point of view, and he's a 7-time world champion. My bar for Lewis Hamilton's performance is set at the very, very high bar that Lewis Hamilton has set. Verstappen is very, very good, but he's much, much newer. And we've got much less data points to judge him by.
Yeah, and can we just make one point? And this is something that I've made just about every time when I've criticised Hamilton when I've been on this podcast. And unfortunately this year, is every time he's had a really scruffy race, I seem to be on. So yeah. I have to stick the knives in. And I will say it, and I will call it and tell it as I see it. And kudos, again, take my hat off. He's done this throughout his whole career, regardless of what the Twitterists say or anything like that. He is the first one to own up to a mistake. And he apologised to his team, and he takes hats off. He's a bit like Charles Leclerc. He will beat himself up and he will own it. He will own his mistake. And it's never anyone else's fault. He absolutely owns it and wears it and takes it. So that is absolute kudos. And I don't think he gets enough credit for this. In fact, people say quite the opposite. And it really irks me because I'm just like, no, there's the one guy who actually does own his mistakes and is very apologetic to the team. So you can see it actually, it hurts him. But yeah, he did have a couple of un-Lewis-esque mistakes.
I appreciate that from someone who is weirdly and inexplicably a 2-time Schumacher fan. And I think secretly a Ferrari fan, but doesn't want to admit it because you don't feel like this is a safe place to say that. I think Maria sums it up there. For Lewis's standards, errors seem to be creeping in more lately. And I'm not sure that's overly controversial, Matt.
Well, I very much harken back to Vettel in the year that Ferrari was almost a contender. I think that you take somebody as good as Lewis and you put them in a car as marginal as Mercedes, and you do start to see these kinds of errors happen because the expectation is the car will support the driving, but it doesn't always. And so I think that's one. And then the other thing I just want to talk about, maybe after Chris gets in here, is there's some tire controversy that I would hate to go missing before we moved on to Russell.
Well, let's get Chris's call in, and then we'll do the tire controversy and then Russell.
Well, guys, we only have 5 races left this season. And I know Lewis Hamilton has said he doesn't care about it, but that record of winning and getting a pole position in every single season he's competed in is now seriously.
I need Van Gien here on the podcast. I need, like, because me and Van Gien are like the most Hamfosi really on the panel.
People annoyingly think, so, yes.
People think Brad is Hamfosi. He really isn't. And Matt is, you know, he's like Hamfosi light. But me and Alex, we definitely look at that record of he's won in every single season, regardless of whether they've had a championship winning car or not, and do hold that dear. But there's also a reality of age, and I'm aware of that age in my own body. Matt, you're horribly aware of the effects of getting a lot older. But you know, there
what
is
would make you say that
just how old you are and look. But there is a finite curve to athletes, and Lewis Hamilton, my goodness, is he 38?
37?
37. Well, a far fitter 37 than anyone else on this panel. But yeah, anyway, your point, Matt, on tyres.
Right. So there are two places that that tires came into the discussion. One was at the start, as Kyle mentioned earlier, I believe. Lewis very much wanted to start on a used set of inters because they come up to temperatures more quickly.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I went back and watched the onboard to see. And if I'm going to be honest, they might have made a slight difference later. But given the disparity in the sides of the grid they started on, I don't think it would have helped him all that much because it was just that much slippier. In fact, he was getting wheel spin in fourth gear at one point in the early laps. And hilariously, you remember that radio message about the tires came after Bono gave him the gaps to Sainz ahead, which is 2.5 seconds, and to Norris behind, which is like 1.7. And as soon as he got those gaps, he was like, see, I told you, we should have been on those other tires. But that was before he got up to Sainz. So I think it was just, I think it was just already a frustrating race that Sainz was ahead of him. But I had someone actually ask me on Twitter about going onto the medium tire at the end of the race, because we had Bottas and we had Ricciardo both go onto the soft tire, and whether or not that might not have been a better choice given the warm-up characteristics of the Mercedes. And having looked at it, neither Ricciardo nor Bottas made any overtakes with those soft tires.
No.
So on the whole, I don't think it offered any advantage that would have been worth the risk, in my opinion.
Although my son did point out to me, and he said that I did have to credit him if I used this on the show. Just an interesting point to note. Bottas on older soft tires, three laps older, was faster in clean air than Ricciardo. What make of that of what you will, Kyle?
Yeah, and Ricardo's in one of the camps, because I realised that Pete Shilcock mentions in the
I was going to mention in our live chat
that we haven't mentioned a rather anonymous third place finisher in Carlos Sainz, but Ricardo was in that camp of teammates who were comprehensively spanked on pace,
yes,
but got semi-decent results. But actually, the results really flattered their actual performance.
Yeah, Pete, I appreciate what you're saying. And normally, like, you would speak about the people who finished on the podium. But had there not been safety cars, I think Sainz would probably be a lot further back, Chris. And he was substantially behind Leclerc. So we're not going to sit here and jump up and down and praise that podium.
No, you want to talk about something. He was much lower than Leclerc today. Lucky to be on the podium. Mm. That's it.
Matt.
Look, I'm sorry. Anyone whose hair looks like that at the end of the Singapore Grand Prix in the rain deserves some credit.
Oh, man. Like, honestly, like Perez. Perez is sat there just dunking water over his head, and he just looks like a drowned rat. Like, he really worked for that race victory. And then Sainz, like, just tips up, and it's like he's in a... He's like in a L'Oreal advert. Yeah, it's insane.
It was madness. Mm. I will give him credit. He kept Hamilton behind.
Yeah.
He got ahead at the start. Both things he needed.
Okay, hang on. He was pretty rude at the start into turn one. I would actually like Kyle's view on that. Kyle, not penalised. Not saying it should be penalised. But that's not fair on Hamilton, what Sainz did in turn one.
It wasn't. It was rude. Was it fair with the way the regulations are written? He was actually ahead of Hamilton on turn one, and Hamilton then braked later to try to go around the outside. And I don't think it was intentional from Sainz. I think Sainz was on the limit, and he just nudged Hamilton. We've seen Hamilton do this to Rosberg before.
Okay,
saw it a lot. So it was rude. But
let me ask you
this. Unfair.
What if he'd have been shoved off, a lot like all the Abu Dhabi stuff that's come up on lap one, where Verstappen pushed Hamilton off? What if Hamilton had been pushed off, turn one, Singapore, and then stayed ahead or gotten ahead of Sainz? Would you expect Hamilton to give that place back?
I think if Hamilton would have just done an Alonso and just blatted over the chicane there at the start.
Yeah.
And then that would have been an interesting discussion, because I think Mercedes had the case of...
He was shoved off.
Well, we're ahead, we shoved off. But then Ferrari would say we were actually ahead before we got into the braking zone of the corner, and you were trying to effect a pass around the outside and you've just driven off. So if I was the stewards, I'd probably tell Lewis to give that place back.
Interesting.
And if I was Lewis, I wouldn't. I'd just get more than 5 seconds ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Meow.
I'm saying it's been done before.
I mean,
wouldn't have been hard.
He's old. He talks too slowly and for too long, but he's not wrong about that, is he? He's not wrong about that. My goodness. George Russell. Who wants to lead with George Russell?
I want to come to the defense of George Russell ever so slightly.
Okay.
Because I talked about being put in a position of desperation with Lewis Hamilton, and that is the position that George Russell found himself in from the word go, because he was starting from the pit lane because they decided to change his engine after qualifying. I'm not sure if that was the best decision, whether that was a tactical move or whether they had to change it. Because I think starting 11th would have been a lot better. And the reason he was starting 11th as well was because of this weird brake issue where the car was sort of still pushing forward. So he didn't really have the tools in qualifying available to him. So I do feel a bit bad for him. And he's just sort of in a position where it's going to be impossible to overtake. I have to just do crazy things. Otherwise, my race is done. And then was on the slick tires way too early and was like, well, I just have to make this work. So yeah, really subpar race, but I don't think much less of him because of it.
I actually think it was a bit of a subpar weekend in general from sort of George. And yeah, they said, you know, and we're allowed to criticize him. I've sat and done nothing but praise him on this show pretty much all year. So, you know, again, I will say it as I see it. It was subpar. He had lots of little instances in the practices, which is probably why they changed his power unit. Now, if you are trying to go into a corner and you come completely off the throttle and you've still got a bit of torque pushing you forward, yeah, that is a problem.
Yeah.
Did we actually see any data? Was this actually proven, or was this them sort of changing it and taking excuse to get an engine in?
No, I mean, they said it like immediately after qualifying. I think George talking about it during qualifying on the radio as well.
Okay, but yeah, but in the race, he had a couple of sort of quite under George-like moments. The first one when he sailed up the inside of Bottas and just like skidded off.
Again?
Yeah, I'm going to take some issue with that. An un-George-like moment.
Whose fault is it?
look, I'm not going to sit here and say George Russell isn't a not talented driver, but he's got this squeaky clean reputation that isn't warranted. He's a very, very aggressive driver. So he had two incidents, Kyle. Mm-hmm. What was that one you were referring to?
Well, the one with Bottas, where he just absolutely sent it and just completely sailed straight on. And Bottas kind of saw it coming and they still managed to make contact. And then the second one he had was with Mick Schumacher, when he just drove straight into the side of Mick Schumacher. He just drove straight into him.
In fairness, there was way more than a car's width on the outside there. Mick was not using any of it.
He doesn't have to. Whoa. He doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to.
I know he doesn't, but then he was there.
But then,
in fairness, Schumacher refused to get out of his way.
Yeah, that was terribly rude. Awful.
No, hang on. Let's be clear. Like, George Russell, on the approach there, on the overtake with Schumacher, he picked the middle of the track. And Mick Schumacher doesn't then have to go all the way to the outside. Russell isn't entitled to then push him to the outside on the entry. He can only go as far as where there's no car. And he went further than that. Quite rudely, Chris.
But Mick went straight. He didn't leave a car's width.
No, hang
he
on.
Didn't. But Mick was going completely straight. He probably had half a car's width or a car's width on his outside. He could have gone. He wasn't on an unusual line.
No.
Slightly tighter racing line.
Yes.
And then George Russell in the braking zone just veers straight over into Mick.
I think we have to be clear on this. If you're going on a straight down towards a corner, if you're the outside car, you don't have to take the entry all the way to the outside. If you happen to be in the middle of the road and you've got the car on the inside, you can stay in the middle of the road. The inside car obviously wants to get to the outside, and he would love it if you gave him all the room in the world, but you can stay straight, and the inside car can't just keep driving out. 100% that is George Russell's fault. Not only that, he ruined kind of both of their races and then got on the radio to be like, why is Mick Schumacher fighting this so hard? He's fighting it like it's the race of his life. Well, maybe, George, it's because you just absolutely smashed into him a few laps back.
And is fighting for his seat as well.
Yeah,
true. This harps back to the Albon, they fight me so hard sort of comment. Also, it was similar to that.
They want your seat, Alex.
Yes.
Matt.
Yeah, well, I this is literally the place that I wanted to go. It's just this weird sense that you sometimes get from certain drivers that, well, you should just get out of my way because I'm me and I'm driving a Mercedes. And no, No, why should that be the case? It's much more entertaining when they don't pull a Gasly and just get out of Verstappen's way early on in the race. It's much more entertaining when you have late race Gasly who refuses to get out of Verstappen's way.
So I think the last regular team we're probably going to cover here, I'll just quickly say, you know, Aston Martin, probably damning them with faint praise today, but in an attrition-heavy race, they ended up in the points, Chris.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think it's faint praise at all because Haas didn't manage to do it. And I would argue they've got a stronger driver pairing at the moment than Aston Martin. So I think that was great. And Stroll was, honestly, like,
he was
really
fine.
Impressive. He was.
Well, calm down. Stroll does well in the races where people push too hard and fall off.
I mean, he beat multiple world champions today. So. I don't know. It seemed like a pretty good drive to me.
The races where Lance Stroll has looked most impressive has been where people have gone too far over the risk-reward barrier, Kyle. And today, the you know, being steady and plonky-plonky was advantageous, and he did well.
Yeah, I think even without the with people dropping out, I can't remember the word, but without people, the attrition, that's it. Even without the attrition, he was still well inside the top 10 and holding his own and ahead of Vettel. He was absolutely solid. Stroll was probably, Perez was my driver of the race.
What?
He was absolutely solid in
that
an Aston Martin,
far.
Which isn't the easiest car to drive.
My
he
goodness.
Did, it was
oh
so
my
much
goodness.
As a snatched brake, and he absolutely nailed it. And he's just beating his four-time champion teammate, you know, convincingly. And we know he's a wet weather specialist, but on a street track, he could have made so many mistakes there and he didn't. And what was he, seventh in the end? Seventh or sixth? Brilliant drive, six. And it's great for Aston.
I've clipped that for social media, Chris. Feedback at mistapex.net. Please side with me over this bearded monstrosity, Matt.
But the thing to take home from this is that in a single race, Aston has gone from ninth to seventh ahead of both Haas and AlphaTauri. And that, in the constructors, is a huge leap. That is a lot of money we're talking about now.
They've got some of the best funding in F1. Like, they have, this is not some chancer team. Okay. This is not Hesketh,
okay,
who has just come up from F2, Chris, saying they leapt to seventh. Why is the bar so low for Aston Martin?
Spanners. I think we talked about this at the beginning of the year when Aston Martin were way below what we were expecting from them for this year. And it's that their philosophy is, I've just bought the best pound for pound team in Formula One, so I'm going to chuck money at them. And that's not really how it works.
It's not what they do.
So I think in terms of what they've been given, you know, of a car this year, they're doing a pretty good job with it. And to be beating AlphaTauri and to be beating Haas, who had such a really strong start to the season.
Yep.
As well, and this is all really playing out because it's not not just the money as well. They just cut their wind tunnel time in half. I'm exaggerating, but
I think this is a lesson to all the young lovers out there who are thinking about getting married and settling down. Don't put the hard yards in yet. Reduce expectations so that any little thing you do gets treated as a fantastic achievement, like a Herculean pushing a rock up a hill for all eternity. There you go. I think we've summed that up nicely. McLaren, it's a good result for them, Matt. But I feel like they have been so peaky that, okay, this is a McLaren peak. And obviously Alpine, you know, fell off the cliff.
Mistakenly went for the external combustion engine this race.
How excited do we want to be about a great P4, P5 for McLaren, given the amount of retirements and given their generally peaky performance?
I think it is worth being excited because they brought a huge update and it seemed to be functioning. I think it's worth being excited if you're a McLaren fan because they are back in fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
With only a handful of races left. And as a fan, this is one of three battles left to be concerned with. One is Perez and Leclerc for second in the Drivers' Championship.
Go on, Checo.
Perez is 2 points behind Leclerc.
Get in there, lads.
That's going to be something to watch. The second is the battle between Alpine and McLaren. See if Alpine can come back at Suzuka and take fourth back. I expect this to go pretty much to the end. And the third is the three-way duel, which I'm reliably informed is called a truel.
Oh my
between
God.
AlphaTauri, Haas, and Aston for seventh place in the championship. So there's not nothing left to watch in terms of battles and excitement. Pick your people and root for them now, because probably all of those will go down to the wire.
Why shouldn't we be excited about a huge development between two pretty major teams in Formula One that is really defining in their Constructors' Championship battle for fourth place in a race where Alpine really, really have dropped the ball in terms of their reliability, that neither car finished, while McLaren has taken a above average points haul. It's not just like they managed to pick up seventh and eighth today. No, they picked up a huge points haul for them that is changing the face of that battle. And that is exciting.
It is. And I think they managed to get themselves into that position by, well, you could say they were lucky under the safety car, but I actually don't think they were lucky. I actually think they were very, very clever here, and they played the chances, because, you know, the race starts, it's wet, it's tricky. You reckon there's probably about a 30, 40% chance of a safety car. Now, they were going quite long on their intermediates anyway, but what do you think the risk and the chances of a safety car is going to do when people start changing to dry tyres on still a damp, very tricky track? It goes up to about a 90% chance of a safety car. So I think this was an intentional goal hang. They stayed an extra lap thinking, surely, they were goal hanging. So there's an intentional goal hang. So they've gone out and basically like, well, if there's going to be a safety car, it's going to be now, because one of these people is going to stuff it into the wall. And that is duly and promptly what happened. And they just solidified their brilliant result, and it worked out a wonder for Ricciardo. So they actually pitted like a lap later than everyone else to get onto the dry tires, and I think this was semi-intentional. If that would have been me on the pit wall, I'd have been like, hang on a minute, lads, wait a minute, it's just about to kick off, let's just wait one more lap.
Great analysis.
100% it was intentional, and I think they always intended to take those intermediate tires a little bit further into the race than everyone else. You alluded to my F2 analogy earlier, Kyle. And the way that this played out was quite similar to what you might see in a Formula 2 race, where if you remember, they don't use tire blankets. Mm-hmm. So normally what happens is you make your pit stop if you're behind your rival, whatever. You come out your pits on cold tires. So you struggle initially and you might lose a bit of time to your rival. But then when they make their stop, you've got nice hot tires. And while they're struggling, you take your advantage. And that's kind of what bizarrely happened when the change from intermediates to the slicks was happening, because it was taking that lap to get them into the window for that same lap. Taking the intermediates would have been quicker. So they were actually kind of overcutting the rest of the field, and then really like bang, that safety car really nailed home that strategy.
Yeah, the overcut was king over the undercut, which is not often we get to actually see that. It's usually inverse to that. So that was really interesting, and yeah, absolutely paid off for them. Even though Ricciardo, yes, he was running a different spec car, wasn't he, this weekend? There was only one new McLaren, I believe.
I think that update was specifically aimed at low speed corners. So I'd be surprised if it's still on the car in Suzuka.
It was a long term update, not specific to the track, I think.
Okay. But I think there was just one of them, wasn't there?
Oh, okay.
Matt.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing was that was obvious visually was the change in the side pod entrance, looking much more like Red Bull's. But I suspect they changed more than that, but we don't always get the pictures to confirm it. But what I like about it is this, again, is an example of McLaren outthinking a team by drawing the obvious conclusion very quickly, which is if the rest of the field is going on to slick tires and we can hang on for another lap or so, we've got a great chance of a safety car saving us, you know, 15, 20 seconds in the pit lane.
Quick one. I'll go to Kyle here before we go to the podium. If you could say that Lando Norris's Halo tribute helmet looked like any vegetable at all, which vegetable would you choose?
Sprout, my nemesis at Christmas.
Fantastic. Guys, we have got to make sure that we don't go over an hour, because I have promised everyone on the panel and everyone in the wider crew, all their partners, all their children, that Missed Apex will never, ever exceed 1 metric hour. So let's move on to the podium. The Singapore Grand Prix, which is a street circuit. And I am very much against street circuits. I don't think so many of them should be on the calendar. However, I always judge my F1 experience on, did I enjoy my viewing, sat with my boy or by myself or with my friends? Did I enjoy watching Formula One today? And I have to say, I really, really did. Starting on interchangeable conditions, seeing the little bit of a battle at the start, watching to see what the people would do, like the tactics, where was that crossover point. I think watching free practice 3 and also watching qualifying gave us that knowledge of where that crossover point would be. And it's really, again, important to try and watch the live timings if you can and have a look. Like, if you'd have watched qualifying, you go, oh, we know where that crossover point is sort of roughly. So if you see that they're doing 156, you go, right, that's nowhere near ready for dry tyres. And things like listening to Matt droning on endlessly about tyre crossovers and water displacement of intermediate and full wet tyres really does add to this experience of Formula One. And then towards the end of the race, we really did get rewarded with some genuine good racing. I think this season was probably one of the key races where you could sit on an onboard if you have that option, and just watch a battle. So if you watched Max Verstappen on the onboards as he was trying to work his way through the pack, you know, as he was really struggling to get past Kevin Magnussen, as he was fighting Fernando Alonso, as Pierre Gasly got waved an orange flag and just moved aside as if it was a blue flag twice. But watching those onboards, say from Leclerc, pushing really hard to try and get past Sergio Perez for the win, there was a driver challenge here. I think it was good, entertaining TV. And as someone who is really against street tracks, I had a good time watching TV. I hope you did too. I hope you enjoyed listening to Missed Apex podcast. Do me a favour, please. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. If you're listening on the audio, thank you so much for all the amazing 5-star reviews we've had. We have had dozens and dozens. It has been absolutely fantastic. And if I could ask once again, tell one person you know to tune into Missed Apex podcast. MissedApex.net is the easiest way to say to people, right, just go and type in how many W's was that? Did I do too many? www.missedapex.net. That gets you to a homepage that has all the video and audio ready to go. So that's what I'm going to ask you guys today. There are 44,000-ish people that tune into our race reviews. If you could all just tell one person to go and check us out, that would be absolutely amazing. But this is the part of the show where we do awards. So the first awards we do is this, the thing of the weekend. Who's ready? Carl, you're a generally negative person, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. Can you think of a positive thing to give an award to this weekend in F1?
Funnily enough, this is the only one that I didn't have one already for. I hadn't thought of any good things.
Oh.
So, but I'm actually going to come out and say my good thing, my thing of the weekend was the Aston double point score, because it seemingly came from nowhere.
Okay, so what you're doing is you're taking a team who has chronically underperformed this year and giving them an attaboy for sort of doing okay in one race once.
Okay. Money doesn't instantly equate to pace, so you might have to see that. So next year they're going to have no excuses, but this year I think we can cut them a bit of slack.
No, I don't agree. Chris, good thing award. Who would you like to give your good thing award to?
It's got to be Charles Leclerc hunting down Sergio Perez car restart. I could not take my eyes off it.
Amazing. Matt Trumpets, who's your thing of the weekend?
Well, as much as I'd be tempted to go for the entirely useless DRS, which was fun to watch, or defense, as we say over here in the United States, I think my thing has to go to the track and the weather combination, making so many brilliant drivers look like absolute noobs.
Yeah, because they all had to push to get a result, which is pretty good, which kind of makes a mockery of my criticism of this track in general. But did Bernie have a point? Can we have like a roulette wheel? And at the beginning of every race, you either get rain, no rain, do the sprinklers, you know, make it a half race distance. This race, Kyle, is now 4 hours long because that's what the roulette wheel said. 4 hours in the snow, go.
Oh my God, please hope Stefano isn't listening to this because we'll have fan voted for sprinklers or whatnot next.
I honestly didn't entertain the very real possibility that if Domenicali hears that, he might make it happen. So is it me to do a thing of the weekend award? I hope no one was expecting me to not give it to Sergio Perez for proving once and for all that he's definitely a better choice than Albon and Gasly.
What?
Conclusively proved. That's definitely the case. Okay, in that case, Chris, please name four Albon victories for Red Bull. Thank you. I'll wait.
I wasn't wanting your Perez over Albon. I was wanting the you choosing him as your thing of the weekend. I'm shocked.
What? Who do you think I'd choose?
You're
being sarcastic, right?
Okay. Sarcasm detector not found in Spanners.
I need to work on that. We do another award and it's not so positive. So trigger warning, we're going to get super mean. It's the Missed Apex Award.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
It's named after the title of the show. Okay, who's the most negative person on my panel? Kyle! To be fair, Kyle, you're more negative in the morning times.
Definitely.
Evening Kyle is a happy Kyle.
Generally, yeah. Alcohol's nothing to do with that at all.
No. I wasn't suggesting as much. But you should follow Kyle on Twitter, at KylePowerF1. Please go and follow him. Lots of hot takes, and I enjoy following you on there as well. But who missed the apex for you?
Now, I tried to stray away from the controversy or flamey stuff, and I tried to be quite neutral and in the middle, but today I might break my little duck there. So there was one particular comment from a team principal that made me choke on the crumpet.
Oh.
And when I was at it, and that was the absolute irony of a Christian Horner getting upset and accusing teams of making defamatory comments after, in my opinion, their year-long smear campaign they did to anybody who'd listen all year last year. And then the irony of saying that comment, I almost choked on, you know, when I read that, and I'm just like, wow. Okay, so that is my missed apex because I just couldn't believe the irony.
Kyle, there's no such word as defamatory.
Oh, deflammatory. Sorry. There we go.
Words are hard. To be fair, words are hard. We haven't.
Hang on a minute. I'm right.
We haven't touched on the budget cap stuff yet. So if you want to just settle in, the next half an hour we'll discuss that when we have more information. I believe information on that budget cap stuff will be coming out midweek. And basically, until it comes out, we don't know anything. So as far as you know, Red Bull's outrage and anger could really be caused by the fact that they've done absolutely nothing wrong and they've been slandered massively online. Time will tell. Matt, who missed the apex for you?
Well, you know, there are so many people who literally missed apexes today that I could choose.
Well, Perez missed a bunch in that race defense.
Yeah, and, you know, Russell and obviously Verstappen and Hamilton. So to me, that's a target-rich environment. But there is only one. That's Alpine.
Mm.
Both of their engines blew up in a race where they had a clear advantage over their nearest constructors' championship rivals, McLaren. And something went very, very, very wrong. And it was very, very also clearly their fault and their fault alone. So, yeah, they missed the apex, in my opinion.
I think that's fair. Chris Stevens. Oh, in fact, sorry, Matt. At MattPT55 on Twitter.
Yep.
Anything else to push and promote? You're not starting a brand new lingerie line that you'd like to put a hot link to?
I've got a concert October 14th, but that'll wait till next week.
Can we come to that?
Yeah, actually.
In America?
We'll be able. And if you're in America land, you could. All right.
Next week, we'll talk about that. Go follow Matt at MattPT55. He is criminally underfollowed on Twitter, so go and follow him. We have Chris, who is at Chris on Racing. Hey, Chris.
That's me.
I know.
Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
Does Missed Apex, are we up and running on TikTok yet? Have we got clips on?
I mean, I'm logged in. I haven't had any clips because it's been 3 weeks since the last race. So tomorrow you'll see them.
So how do you follow us on TikTok? I guess you click the link in the show notes.
We'll put a link in the show notes. Go onto your TikTok app and search for Missed Apex F1.
Well, there you go. That'll do. I know you're not a generally negative person. You're full of sunshine and moonbeams. But who would get your Missed Apex award this weekend?
I felt really confident in mine. Now I'm worried it might be a bit harsh. But for me, it's Sainz. Hey? Just because I was really underwhelmed by him today.
Yeah. Well, this is it. And I think people will go, well, he finished third. Yeah, but he really was a long way off the pace. And he's been a long way off Leclerc. I don't want to really judge him on this season. It almost feels like one data point. Like this car, this regulation set, it's not suiting him. He's got a contract for next year. I think it is still possible that they get out of the blocks next season and that he will challenge. Because once Leclerc was the title challenger, you have to think Ferrari shifted their focus to him.
He had such a rough start to this year.
Yeah.
And it took him a while to come back from that. So I think if he comes out the blocks fast next year, we could have a very different story.
My Missed Apex award goes to Aston Martin, who have been reported to have slightly exceeded the budget cap. What did they spend it on? We will be definitely back for the Japanese Grand Prix race review. Please tune in. I always look forward to Suzuka. I think, Kyle, one of your favourite tracks as well.
It is indeed. I've actually been there and I love the place and the fans. It is awesome. If you have the chance and you're in that part of the world, go to Suzuka. It's one of the best fan experiences you can have for Formula One.
Chris, is it right that it was a test track?
I think it was built as a test track, yes, for Honda, I think.
Sure, correct.
Yeah, say it with confidence. No one will research this.
What I love about Suzuka is that because it's the earliest race of the season, it gives us the entire day to have arguments before the show comes on.
There you go. Good point, Matt.
So there could be no possible truth at all, since it was built as a test track for Honda, that Red Bull purposefully tanked Max's qualifying so that he'd win the championship there instead.
Ooh, I love me a good conspiracy theory. We may hook up a midweek show of some sort. The only way you'll really know is if you subscribe to us by clicking like and subscribe on YouTube, or making sure you subscribe on your podcatcher of choice and follow us on Twitter at MissedApexF1 or me, Spanners Ready. I'm the best one at Spanners Ready. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. Search for Spanners or Richard Ready on Facebook. If you'd like to be friends, which I hope we will be. Wherever we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Metric Hour.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.